I'm Blake Collins.
And unlike Blake, I'm Nick Devadas.
And welcome to The Health Quest.
The Doolander's Health Quest. Yes, this is the series when we talk to experts in health and wellness about their top advice for people over 40.
Let's do it. Lauren Hanna, welcome to The Doolander's. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Nick, how are you?
Good. I'm well on my way to living forever, Blake.
You are. Look at you. Just getting younger by the minute. Hey, Warren, as you first came up on screen, I almost didn't recognise you because you weren't in Lycra.
Oh, he is. He just hasn't stood up yet.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Hey, Warren, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I? Well, I guess I'm a dad of three kids, a husband, basketball coach, golf tragic, long-suffering Essendon supporter, and a small business owner is probably who I am. And what do I do? Well, essentially, I help people make smart decisions with their money. I guess I've got a real passion for helping people. As you know, Nick, you know, I grew up in the country as well, and you learn great values around community and everyone chips in and helps everyone and does things like that. And that's something I've carried on in my professional career, where I've got a real privilege of being able to lead a great business where we work with pre-retirees, retirees, families, small businesses to help identify what they're after. We try and make the complex simple and help them live the lives that they want to live. So
that sounds that's what I do. That's a great way to be. Hey, how's your basketball coaching ability?
Challenging. Riley, my son, he's one of our key players. He's got he's a competitive little beast, so trying to do all that sort of stuff is always challenging. But mate, I love it. It's how I give back to the community, and you know, gives me still a bit of competitive edge as well. So it's great.
Do you wear the suit and have the clipboard? Is that you?
Nah, not quite that level. The Knights give us a jumper and a bag, and that's enough for me. So.
Nice. Hey, mate, as a young fella, a teenager, you know, rolling around the country streets, were you thinking to yourself, I want to help people make smart decisions with their money? Or how did you get into what you're doing today?
Well, obviously did all the sort of finance subjects at school that I was interested in, accounting and all that sort of stuff, and ended up going to uni and in Melbourne, and came down and thought I'd have a go at financial planning and business and stuff like that. And very early on in my career, I was fortunate enough to actually witness firsthand my old man. He was going through a big period in his life where he was taking a voluntary redundancy. And while financially, you know, the numbers all stacked up and I helped him with that, one thing that really helped me and what I learned a lot from dealing with that is the other aspects of finance, other aspects of retirement, you know, sense of purpose, what are you going to do with yourself, you know, what does it all mean for him at that point in time. So that was a real learning for me around, you know, what I wanted to do, and that's something I've carried on to help, you know, our clients along the way, and because it's more than just necessarily all about money. Yeah.
It's an interesting point, actually. There's certain things that they'll teach you at school, and if you want to become a lawyer or a doctor, you've got to go and do the education, not only at tertiary but also at your secondary education, yet things about money and parenting probably fits into that same category. There's no formal education, it's only what you learn from your parents,
and often people are a bit reluctant to talk about money too. So you know, some families are really open about it, and some families, you know, there's one dominant person who does all the decision making. So you're right, there isn't really necessarily a textbook on money, so to speak.
It is absolutely crazy, isn't it, that we don't actually learn financial literacy, personal financial literacy through school. Crazy stuff. But that's good for you, Warren. So, if you look across Australia, let's just go with Australia at the moment, how good are we at managing our finances as a, you know, as a community? Are we any good?
There's definitely some people who are very good at it, but I'd say across the board, there's definitely lots of challenges in relation to financial literacy. I mean, just recently, sort of Melbourne Uni have done research And it's found that sort of 77% of Australians actually have regrets about their finances, whether it's, you know, that they haven't saved enough or they didn't start investing early enough. You know, even simple things around budgeting, you know, it's, yeah, it's a pretty interesting factor, and something I'm pretty passionate about is educating people, because ultimately, you know, financial well-being is pretty important to your lifestyle and to your relationships with other people as well. So, yeah, I'd suggest that there probably needs to be a bit of work done in that area for sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, so you're saying 3/4 of the population have regrets in regards to their personal finances. That's a big percentage.
It is. It is. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, when you think about, let's go with the solvency or how well-placed people are in terms of having, I don't know, enough cash in the bank to deal with the day-to-day stuff and maybe some unexpected events, how well placed are we across Australia?
Not very well at all. Like, you know, talking to different clients along the way, like, and different researchers, you know, results and things like that, it's like, it's really staggering that, you know, 1 in 5 people have less than $1,000 in the bank. So, you know, their ability to even come up with the money if the fridge breaks or they need to replace the washing machine, it's pretty, it is pretty shocking. And that's something I'm pretty passionate about, definitely. It's about, you know, putting a strategy in place to be able to weather some of those financial shocks and the like, because there's no doubt Australians aren't as well prepared as what they should be.
Okay.
So is that a lot just living paycheck to paycheck, or are they using, you know, inappropriate systems like buy now, pay later? I'd love to know your thoughts on systems like that.
Yeah.
Is it generally the population that they could be saving more than $1,000, or are some people just really on the line?
I think you're exactly right. People are living paycheck to paycheck, and these things like, you know, pay-as-you-go sort of scenarios put more and more pressure on families, and they, because they want it now and they'll deal with it later. And I think as we're coming into an interest rate environment that's going to be potentially pretty challenging over the next sort of 12 months or so, These sort of families are going to be under some real pressure. And we really did see that during COVID. You know, if there was pressure on ability to earn an income or, you know, get a job or the like, it put a lot of people under lots of pressure. And it's something that really, as Australians, we do need to look at, you know, putting a strategy in place to make sure you've got the ability to weather the storm is really important. And that's what we do at JBS. We try and work with our clients to help not only our clients, but even our clients' families, you know, because often parents are worried about their kids and making sure that they've got the right strategy in place for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into it, right? So Nick and I, as you know, we're going to live forever. Well, as long as we can anyway. And
yeah, for sure.
You know, let's say, what are the foundations that we need to think about to make sure that we're, you know, we're geared up for now and into the future? How would you approach that, those foundational discussions?
I guess from our point of view, like, you're obviously talking about a quest for 40-year-olds and plus, and I really feel that you can never start too early. You know, the small little steps towards, you know, funding whatever your goals are, and they're individual for every person, every situation. But I guess it's really about drilling down what's important to you. But some specific ones, I mean, if you wanted to go into some specific strategies, I mean, getting on top of and understanding your budgeting and your cash flow, I mean, that's as critical as anything.
So just on that, right?
Yeah.
How many people walk into your doors and don't have a budget?
The majority of them don't.
So the majority of people don't have their own personal budget, don't know how much is coming in and going out.
And most people are actually either embarrassed or scared of the word. Whereas in my mind, budgeting isn't a judgment thing. It's about understanding where money goes. And if you have information, you can make an informed decision. So we work with our clients on that. And I don't need to know, you know, the ins and outs of your gas bill. But, you know, if you're spending $4,000 a month on X or whatever it is along the way, that's what we look big picture on. And then talk to people about the longer term benefits of, you know, as I was about to say, paying yourself first. So
what do you mean
budgeting
by that?
Well, what we talk about that, if people save what's left over at the end of the month, there's never anything left over. So what we do is we work with people around doing a budget and saying, well, let's set up a strategy where you know that it's going to cost you X amount a month to meet your bills, to meet your groceries, to meet your fuel or electricity or those sorts of things. And then on top of that, you put away for lump sum expenditures. So whether you need to have an allowance for something on the property or you know, have a bank there, as we were talking about before, building up just a 10 grand buffer in your bank account for unexpected, you know, lump sum expenditure. So we work with clients around really paying themselves first, setting up things like simple direct debit so that when their money comes in, it goes out without them seeing it. Because it's really interesting. People do, they generate their lifestyle around what their paycheck is. Now, when they get a pay rise or they get a bonus, they don't necessarily change their savings patterns to reflect that. Mm. It just gets consumed in their living expenses because, as I said, there's never anything left over if you don't pay yourself first. Yeah. So.
Like, it's fascinating, isn't it, that people that there's so many people that just don't do that whole budget thing. Like, you know, what's that old saying, that old adage, what gets measured gets done. So, like, if you don't know, you don't know. And how can you possibly get – okay, I love that.
What are some – give us some, you know, this unexpected fund, which, you know, a lot of people aren't saving towards. Is there a percentage that you give vaguely, like, you know, to have in a rainy day fund, you know, should something occur? Or is there a formula that you use to calculate?
Yeah, I think you'd want to have at least a month's worth of pay up the bank, you know, in your bank account.
Right.
Whether we get into talking about personal insurance later or not, but one thing we talk about is, you know, if your money tap turned off, how would you go? And, you know, getting into things like protecting your biggest asset. A lot of our clients are pretty wealthy, but on the flip side, their earning capacity is still their biggest asset. So having the ability to have that protected, and what we talk about there is we can potentially use insurance to cover some degree of that income, but then you need to have at least a month. I'd almost argue you probably should have 3 months worth of salary in the bank there as for emergency purposes, you know, if because when it hits the fan, you need to have that security for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Can we talk about superannuation?
Sure. Everyone's favourite topic.
Sure. Well, you know,
that's future Nick's problem.
That's exactly right. Some people say that superannuation isn't sexy, but Warren's about to tell us why it is. So when you hear superannuation, what do you think, Warren?
What do I think? Mm. Opportunity. It's a great opportunity. I mean, it's a lot of people think of super as a product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a particular, you know, investment or product, but really it's just a tax environment. You know, we all talk about wanting to save tax or invest for tax reduction or look for, you know, go off to the Cayman Islands and have a secret fund or something like that. Here in Australia, we got an awesome opportunity with super, that it's a concessionally taxed environment. And for those who have super when they get to retirement, the tax they pay on their super zero. So if we've got this environment where we can save and build our wealth, you know, and do some cool things with it. I mean, ultimately, it's a tax environment. What you invest in is a totally different conversation. But then if you build that wealth, when you get to retirement and you start using it under current laws and all that sort of stuff, general advice, all that sort of stuff, but it's tax-free. So, you know, you've got this opportunity to build a nest egg that becomes out tax-free at the other end. And I love it. I reckon it's a great opportunity and it's something we should all be more engaged with than what we really are.
I can see the challenge already. You've got a generation now who wants everything immediately to the point where they're putting off initial payments, and yet you're trying to educate people to think about something that's an event that will occur 30, 40 years' time.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the challenge.
Yeah.
And you see that possibly more in people in their 30s and things like that, where they've got multiple super funds and all that sort of stuff. Hopefully by the time we get to their 40s, they're a bit more educated. And it's starting to get a reasonable amount of money, you know. It's starting to get to the point where the returns are significant and the consequences of making good decisions with your super make a real difference. I mean, simple things, you know, you put $100 into your super salary sacrifice, it's only costing you $60 after your tax deduction, and can mean the difference between retiring a year or two earlier, you know. So if you don't even see that money, it's talking again, paying yourself first, putting that money away in a fund and then driving that hard, can make a real difference at the other end, for sure.
So what's the high level, using that $100 summary, what is the high level difference taking the $100 into your cash account versus putting that $100 into the super account?
Yeah, it'd be a couple of years worth of retiring early. If you were starting at 40 and you were able to put that money in there, in the majority of people, they'd probably be able to retire a year or two earlier.
And how much tax have you saved as a result of doing that? Roughly. Oh, and I know there's marginal tax rates and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I'd have to do the numbers for you. But, I mean, it would be significant. There's no doubt about it. But it's more then, again, what you're then doing with the money once it's in the super fund as well. So you've got this money into an environment, and then the next conversation is what we go about investing it in. And a lot of people get stuck in the fact that they don't have options with their investments in super. That's the cool thing about super, is that you can use it. I mean, we've got many small businesses who have factories or premises that they run their small business out of that's owned by their super fund. And so that's an opportunity to leverage an asset of theirs without getting too much into specific advice and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, you can – what's the best tenant? It's your own business. You're paying rent to the super fund, getting a tax deduction for the rent, and building an asset that you got engagement with because you can see it and you understand it. So there's more to super than just necessarily sitting in a default fund and and not understanding what it's truly invested in, for sure.
Yeah. I'm 65. I'm not, but I get to 65. How much super do I need to lead a comfortable life for the rest of my days?
Brilliant question. It's all relative. So this is the challenge that I have with clients. It's all about what's important to you, right? And so we've got to work through the process of what you think you need. Because I've got clients who on 300 grand a year think they're going to run out of money after tax. But on the flip side, there's a couple that live on, you know, close to $1,000 a week. So it's all relative to what's your lifestyle, what's your purpose, what's your goals and aspirations. I mean, you know, you read the textbooks, some would say you need $1 million, some would say you need $2 million, but ultimately it comes down to what you need yourself, because, you know, that's what my role is. So it's a bit like a fitness coach or something like that. It's about, you know, really understanding what's important to you, what your goals are, so that we can build a strategy to get you what you want in your retirement. But I think, yeah, you should be aiming for at least $1 million these days. Yep. To be able to live in a lifestyle that, you know, that we want, for sure.
Yep. Doesn't seem enough given the volume of parcels that keep on arriving at our door. Like, that might last the first year. Hey,
well, maybe you're more at the higher end.
No. Hey, so what's your advice to those people that have been working maybe in the same industry or the same business for many, many years and have decided, for whatever reason, maybe it's because it's easy, to remain with the same super fund, and it's set and forget, right? Like your super's pulled out each pay packet, goes into your superannuation, it's gone, it's there, you don't even realise. Yep. What's your advice to those people? Like, should they continue to do that, or is it better to get some advice around different types of investment on that super? What do you say to those people?
I guess we'd incorporate that into a full financial health check where we'd have a chat to them around their total situation, their financial well-being, their whole of life situation. Because some default situations are appropriate. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone wants to set and forget, yeah, sometimes that is appropriate. But we feel that we can add more value potentially by reviewing that situation and looking at opportunities, particularly, as I said before, for some of those small business owners or people who would really want to get a bit more engaged. I mean, my biggest thing around it, as you said before, is once people understand what they're invested in, they become more engaged. And when they become more engaged, they, you know, save more or they put more money away, and that allows them to become, you know, close to that financial freedom number. We talk to people about their financial freedom number. That's all about understanding what that number is that you need, either in super or the like, to be able to fund your lifestyle, or give you the choice to work because you want to, not because you have to. And that was one of the big things I really reiterated when I was initially in my career with Dad is the fact that, you know, he was financially free, but from a, you know, purpose and lifestyle point of view, he needed his routine. He needed fulfillment, I guess. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's where we come from, that from.
Got it. So we've got super. We've got the end of super. We've talked about that. Now I'm 40.
Yep.
You wish.
I do wish. Just claw those years back for me. What are the things that people can do that are more current? Now, I know you want to talk about cryptocurrency and you're big on on all of that.
Not at all.
But what are the things that people can do now that really move the dial in terms of, you know, something that's a bit more shorter term focused, like a 5 or 7 year sort of outcome?
Yeah. First of all, crypto, no. That's not a financial product.
That was a joke. That was a joke.
Yes. again, it's really difficult to without articulating the individual situation of what you're wanting to try and achieve. But time in the market is one of the factors that we really focus on. Quality assets, no matter what it is, whether it's a property, whether it's shares, those sorts of things. And it's regular, consistent saving as well. Dollar cost averaging. So, you know, that's averaging money into the market and buying shares at no matter what the price is or whatever the investment is along the way. Strategies like that where compounding interest, time, that's your biggest asset. So when you're 40, the you don't have to save as much because you've got time on your side. Whereas if someone comes to me in their 50s or even 60 and they say they want to retire in 6 months, well, there's not as nowhere near as much time to be able to achieve those sorts of goals. So there's unfortunately no golden, you know, bullet as far as what investments are going to make a killing for you. I just think it's regular consistency, boring sort of stuff whereby you're putting that money away and you're making it work for you to whatever that goal is. So, you know, if it's simply that you wanted to put some money away for a holiday house or investment property, well, let's talk about what you need and when buy and chip away at saving on a regular interval. That's what I would be suggesting, I guess. Does that answer the question, I hope?
Yeah, yeah, it does. And I guess some people, they'll hear budget, they'll hear, you know, put away a few $100 a month. What about, I'm not talking necessarily about Christmas time, what about the special events that happen, you know, and you might want to go and have a big night out with your friends or, you know, a holiday, those sorts of things. Can you still save for things like that, like holidays, Christmas time,
yeah,
and the odd night out? Like, is that what you generally recommend?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, with our budgets, as I said, it's no judgment. So when we're talking to clients about budget, there is an allowance for all of that. Like, you know, you're putting your money away now for next year's Christmas so that you know that there's that bucket of money there that goes towards that sort of stuff. And, yep, absolutely. I talk to husbands and wives about having their own allowance, so to speak, whatever that is, around entertainment. For me, it's golf and red wine. For Kristen, it's gym and clothes or whatever. So it's, you know, that's the whole, it's in the budget, all those sorts of things deliberately, right, so that you know where your money's going. It's not cutting back. It's not at all. It's around allocating your money to things that are important to you. And you know, often people don't realize how much they're spending on Uber Eats. And you talk to them about, you know, if you're just able to pull that back once every now and then, it means you can go out for wine more often or whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's just really, as you talked about, understanding where your money goes, because it gives you information about how to make informed decisions. Absolutely.
Yeah, data-driven. That's what it sounds like to me. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, so, okay. So you talk about data-driven and you set up front, Warren, that, you know, you need to think about paying yourself first and sitting down and creating a budget. Like, in your mind, how disciplined do people need to be, and how often are we checking that budget? How often are we looking at what we're spending, money in, money out? How are the savings going towards that goal? Are we, you know, sitting down every Saturday night and poring over the spreadsheets, or is there an app that we should be hooking up to? How do you think about that?
A lot of, believe it or not, some people do it weekly. But I'm big picture with this sort of stuff. I'm very much, you want to be checking in probably fortnightly to monthly, just on where your cash balances are at. But I use bank accounts like buckets, essentially. So you know that you've got a bucket for holidays, or you've got a bucket for whatever that is. You know, as we spoke about, having your bills, have an allocated amount that goes into different areas so that you know exactly that if you need some money for that particular point in time. But again, you are checking in on it regularly, and that's what we're doing with our clients. We're checking in at least 6 monthly. We're talking to them about how they're tracking towards these goals, reviewing where their debt position might be or the like. And I'd be pretty comfortable that people need to be looking at it as each interest rate goes up, because ultimately we've seen some pretty big changes in interest rates. And again, just being careful with advice, but we, you know, there's a fair chance we're going to see some rates rising. It's going to put some pressure on people. But again, ultimately, it's about making choices with your money about where you do with that money. So where that money comes from that has to fund those extra interest rates, that's what the point of the budget is.
Is there any tech out there or any apps out there that you think are helpful, or do you reckon the way that banks give you a dashboard these days in terms of your accounts and those buckets of money and how you can move them around, and you know, you've got all of the graphs that show you where your balances are at. What's your advice there?
We've got our own financial planning software that helps with some of that sort of stuff. I mean, but personally, if you're wanting to do some, there's a group called MoneySoft that do some apps with them. We've had some clients have some real success with that. There is a fair bit of involvement. You've got to be engaged with it. You know, you're tracking the transactions and you're linking them to different, you know, categories of items and things like that. That is definitely a way that a lot of people are successful with it. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
How do you deal with, you know, we're in our 40s, midlife crisis, the red convertible? When clients come to you and say, oh, I've just got to do it. Do you know anything about the psychology behind the midlife crisis, by the way, and what triggers it?
Not specifically, but it does happen. There's no doubt about it. I saw yesterday one of our clients, 7-year-old, bought himself a Harley. So there you go. So it does it doesn't necessarily have to be midlife crisis either. I don't know how he's going to go on the Harley. But
I'd imagine that is predominantly men as well.
Probably.
Yeah.
There'd be an equivalent.
I don't know. What do you think,
for your stereotypes?
A lot of females think that they're due for a new car when they get to sort of a certain age or a certain birthday. Okay. You know, a lot of people want that overseas trip, so it's probably that challenge as well. Yep. But yeah, no, there's definitely. It is quite funny because sometimes they come to us thinking that we're the person who's the principal in the office or whatever, going to tell them off for doing it. Ultimately, it's their own money. They can make a decision as much as they want. There's no judgment. I guess we're just around educating what the consequence of that sort of decision is. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, money is an enabler, right? You can't take it with you. It enables you to have a lifestyle either now or into the future. So you choose to make decisions with your money and enjoy the midlife crisis now or the consequence of having to work another 6 months at the other end. That's sort of, you know, either way.
I love that. That whole enabler piece, money is an enabler. And I think, like hearing you say that, I think that probably not enough people think about money as an enabler therefore don't have the discipline around paying themselves first and checking in on their budget. The smart people that are using money as an enabler, how, in your experience and what you're seeing, how are they doing that?
I think they've got the balance right between short-term pleasures, short-term enjoyment, but then saving towards the longer term as well. I mean, some of our most successful clients are set themselves up, but they're still working well until their later years. I think that's the balance, is getting yourself financially free, then you've got choices to be able to do what you want to do. And then the next level then is to share that with other people as well, where the amount of people that come to us and think that they don't have enough money to retire, but then after having a conversation, we're able to identify that there is an opportunity for them to retire earlier or change their lifestyle, or the change in mindset once people realize that they're working because they want to, not because they have to. Is massive. So the really successful people in my mind have got real purpose to what they're doing. They've got good balance between you know, enjoyment right now. You know, there's all sorts of benefits of enjoying your money along the way because you never know what's around the corner. But on the flip side, you know, you've got to have a little bit of an eye to the future and look towards what that is. And that's the greatest thing in Australia about superannuation, in my mind. You've got that deliberate forced saving that's always there while you're working, which is a great thing. But then it's a balance of what's important to people in life. Absolutely.
Mm. Talking about an eye to the future, and you know, this is an eye a long, long way away. When we perhaps, you know, hopefully science doesn't make this happen, but we drop off the perch, and
it'll never happen.
No, that's right. Hopefully, talk to us about estate planning, and you know, when should we start thinking about that?
Now, if you haven't already.
Okay.
Like, what is estate
ultimately
planning?
So estate planning is really making sure your wealth goes to the right people at the right time in a tax-effective manner.
Right.
You know, people think of it as for a will is for old people, but unfortunately, and probably part of your quest, you're talking to some people who deal in a lot of health situations, but everyone knows someone who's been sick or everyone knows someone who's passed away, you know. And just to have the documentation correct and appropriate means that really – if something were to happen, your beneficiaries remember you for the person that you were rather than the fight necessarily over your wealth or the tax that you've had to pay because you haven't really thought about it. And one of the big ones, the challenges a lot of people with, you know, getting their estate planning done, they think it's for old people, but it's not, really is guardianship for the kids. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges, is to have that conversation with a partner around, you know, who will look after the kids if something happens to me. But I guess it's simple things, even as much as you know, with your super, making sure that the right nomination's on there. You know, people go through a separation or a divorce and they forget to change their nomination, and then that goes to the wrong person, and then there's all sorts of fighting. So it's just part of the financial check-in that we do with our clients every time we speak to them is you know, what this is what's listed at the moment as your beneficiaries or whatever, is it still appropriate? And if it's not, go and speak to a lawyer about getting a will drafted up, because it is pretty important. Because when it goes pear-shaped, it really does go pear-shaped.
Yeah. Do I need to go and see a lawyer, or can I just do it online?
Oh, I get this question a lot. I mean, with these days, you know, for younger people, there's potentially a TAC claim, or there's some insurance within the super fund. There's potentially a house involved, maybe a holiday house or investment property. You're pretty quickly getting up into the millions with wealth that's going to be distributed.
Mm.
I'd want to have a lawyer dealing with that rather than the post office guy.
Fair yes. call. Yes. I think you're probably right. Okay. We are fast running out of time, and I think we'll have to probably come back at some stage to delve a little deeper.
There's so many areas that we could go into.
Yeah, we could. But, you know, like, listening to you, Warren, this is a lot like any aspect of health, right? Like, it seems like one, set up a plan, two, follow a process and a discipline around adhering to that plan.
Yeah, it's consistency and discipline, isn't it?
Yeah.
Were you about to name a third?
I was, but now that you've interrupted, it's completely flown out of my right ear.
We just finished each other's
sentences.
Sandwiches.
Yeah. Oh. So Warren, like, round us out, bring us all together. So for those people out there listening, our age, 40 to 50 and a little bit over, what are the top three things that they should do to ensure that they are financially healthy?
Great question. I reckon, yep, you got to get in and understand where your money's going. Really review where your cash flow is going. Get on top of that. Don't have to make necessarily changes, but you'll understand straight away that once you know where it's going, you'll naturally make the decisions you need to. Engage in your super. Actually understand where it is, what it's invested in, what the insurance is within it. Often people have inappropriate insurance one way or the other.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you might have too much insurance.
Right.
You know, you pay for stuff within your super fund. Everything has to pay for it. If you've got five or six super funds, you've probably got five or six lots of insurance.
Yep.
And they might not be covered by them all. And personally, I'd just be all about protecting the people that you love. So, you know, ensuring that you review what would happen if something was to happen to you, both from a personal insurance point of view and estate planning point of view, because it, you know, it's really important to make sure you, the people you love are looked after. So, yeah, that'd be my thoughts, I guess.
Love it.
Great three tips. Hey, Warren, thank you so much for your time. Mate, if our listeners want to hear more, where do they find you?
Oh, well, we've got our website, jbsfinancial.com.au. There's a lot of information on there, blogs, videos, education, stuff right. like that. Jump on there. Business partner Jenny's been a stalwart in the industry for a number of years, so you'll see she's won a lot of awards and things like that. So check out the website. There's plenty of resources there. Ultimately, you know, we can post phone numbers, contact details, all that sort of stuff. Happy to chat to anyone. You know, that's what we're here. We love helping people. So, yeah, reach out.
Thanks, Warren. Appreciate your time. Some great advice. And, mate, we'll see you in the Leica in the gym.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Warren.